Remember a time when being a kid didn't require a calendar? Those days are long gone for many families. Lessons, sports, classes, tutoring, clubs, church groups. Many children have busier schedules than their parents. But that means, of course, that the parents' schedules have filled up, too. I'm Brian Ellison. Today on Central Standard, we examine the heavily scheduled or even the overscheduled child and what one author calls hyperparenting, that need to have your kids doing everything all the time. We'll explore the benefits and the risks of busyness among kids and ask what should be done. Later, we'll talk with the former U.S. ambassador to Portugal, now a professor here in town. What's it like to represent America in a foreign land? Work overseas and kids overscheduled. Today on Central Standard, after the news. This show airs at 10 a.m., so if you're listening live and you're a parent, it might be because it's one of the few times today you're able to sit down. If we were on at 3, you might be picking up a kid at school to take him to soccer practice, or at 4:30 running someone to dance class, or at 6 you'd be swinging through the drive-thru at a fast food place on your way to a school concert, or at 8 picking up the youngest from a piano lesson and rushing her home to do homework. So take a deep breath, and welcome to Central Standard. I'm Brian Ellison. If this does sound familiar to you, or even if it doesn't, maybe you should listen. Many psychologists, educators, researchers are concerned about how busy our nation's children have become. They think it might not be good for them, and maybe not good for you either. Others think it may not be so bad. Joining us to help us sort it out are Nicole Wise. She's a journalist and co-author with Alvin Rosenfeld of The Overscheduled Child, Avoiding the Hyperparenting Trap. She joins us from Stamford, Connecticut. Nicole, good morning. Welcome.
Good morning.
We're also joined by Andrea Mata. She's professor of psychology at the University of Findlay in Ohio. She joins us from there. Welcome, Andrea.
Hello.
We'll talk with Andrea here in just a second. Let me start with you, Nicole. Help us understand the extent of what we're talking about. When in your book title you talk about hyperparenting, what do you mean?
When we first started looking at this issue, which was actually in the late 90s, Dr. Rosenfeld and I were talking about how there had been a real change in how parents approach raising their kids. There was a great deal of thought and effort and really sincere, earnest, planning and working hard to raise our kids really, really well. But there's a downside of that, which is that all of this kind of overthinking and hyper-focus on doing this really important job correctly means that it's kind of outcome-oriented. So you know, people have been raising children forever, but it's suddenly it became almost like a job that you need to do really, really well. And that's where we started looking at this. At the time, I was a young mom and in that world, and Dr. Rosenfeld also had children, and he and I were having conversations about what this was like, and it was kind of that over-focus and then how it was manifesting and the effect on family life, and that's kind of where it all began.
So how did we get there? I mean, it wasn't always like this for parents, right?
No. Interestingly, in the past 40 or 50 years, the whole concept of what mothering and parenting didn't even used to be a verb. I am now in my 50s, and I have kids ranging in age from 29 to 19, and I have four of them, so I've walked through all of this. Mine was really the first generation where women grew up expecting to go to work. We went to college. We had jobs. We put off having children, so we'd had all this experience in the workforce, and we brought that kind of considerable energy to raising our kids. So that was one change. Another change was the fact that the media suddenly was everywhere. And I'm talking about back in the 80s when 24-hour television, you know, CNN and, you know, all of this, there were all these, suddenly news was everywhere. Information was everywhere. The internet also, you know, expanded that exponentially. So, you know, here we are. I was a writer and suddenly there was this huge parenting market. There were all these magazines and books about parenting. And I was doing articles on things like, you know, how do you wash a baby's hair correctly? That was kind of a seminal moment for me. Okay, 1,000 words on how to wash a baby's scalp.
So even a reporter like you is blaming the media for this problem.
Well, I think it's very much a part of it, and it's so great to care and bring all of this attention and energy and passion for doing this incredibly important job right. But at the same time, there's a very natural piece of parenting that's intuitive and emotional and happens when you're not doing anything, and
so,
that's what's put at risk.
So at what age kids are you talking about being overscheduled? We're not just talking about, high schoolers who are in 3 clubs and 4 sports. We're talking about much younger kids too, right?
Yeah, and I don't mean to point fingers or cast blame at the idea of enrichment, because it can be absolutely wonderful for a mom who's home with her baby to go to a mommy and me kind of class or music class or, baby gymnastics, et cetera. It accomplishes a lot of things in terms of socialization for both mom and the baby. But the truth is, babies and toddlers don't need enrichment. A 2-year-old can be enriched by a paper bag and a spoon. And that's just, they're going to play and figure things out. And, normal life is a rich experience that really gives a young child all they need. But we start scheduling so early on. And then in elementary school, kids are doing many things. Kids are playing organized sports at the age of 3 and 4. It kind of starts as early as you want it to start.
But obviously these are things that kids enjoy, right? The 3 and 4-year-olds mm-hmm. playing soccer, they may be having a good time. They're getting some physical fitness. Team sports build camaraderie. These are all good things, right?
Absolutely. And your choice of the word enjoy is critical. So long as everybody's enjoying it, and I don't mean every moment is great because, kids, the tantrums or the bad days are part of the experience. But what we're talking about in our book is when you begin to feel stress as a family about all the things you need to do, all the things you need to accomplish, all the places you need to be, if you, the mom or the dad or your relationship is feeling stress, that's something to pay attention to. If your child is not having a good experience, that's something to pay attention to. If your child is, starting to throw tantrums about, I don't want to go to soccer today, pay attention to how they feel. With my own 4, my kids were athletes. My youngest is actually the only one of my 4 who's not terribly competitive. And I remember when she was 8 years old, she was playing soccer and she had an absolute meltdown on the field because she didn't want to play offense. She felt too much pressure, too many people looking at her. That was a really important thing for her to be able to say and important for me to listen to.
I used to coach 8-year-old soccer, and I can imagine that scene very easily in my mind. I'm curious for an example or two. In your research, as your work on this book, did you run across some especially egregious examples of hyperparenting?
Oh, yeah. Like which one?
Tell me one.
I mean, there was a nanny who, this was an anecdote that came to me from my co-author, who's a psychiatrist, and we're in Fairfield County, Connecticut, which is kind of the epicenter. And he had met somebody who had actually paid their nanny a bonus for every developmental milestone that the child exceeded. So if the average age to start walking was 10 months, well, that would be early, was, 11 or 12 months. And if the child walked at 9 months, she got extra money.
Wow.
That's one. I take it on the other end of the spectrum, and this actually occurred in my social circle. As a writer, I know many writers. Somebody was approached by a mom who wanted to hire a writer to work with her son, to actually write her son's papers, because she, the mom, had been doing it, and he was only getting B's.
That's Nicole Wise. She's a journalist and co-author of The Overscheduled Child, Avoiding the Hyper-Parenting Trap, sharing some examples of busy kids and parents who are maybe overly scheduling and overly managing their kids. We're talking today on Central Standard here on KCUR about that. I'm Brian Ellison. We're joined also by Dr. Andrea Mata. She's professor of psychology at the University of Findlay in Ohio. Dr. Mata, your doctoral dissertation was on the impact of extracurricular activity on child development. Do you share Nicole Wise's concerns?
For the most part, I mean, I have some of the similar concerns. However, given the amount of research that I typically just refer to it as activities research or extracurricular activities research or organized activities research, whatever phrase or term you'd like to use, a lot of the research has started within the last probably decade since Nicole and I can never remember his first name, Rosenfield's overscheduled book came out in 2001, I believe. There's been a lot of focus in the activities research on this idea of the overscheduled hypothesis. And so my dissertation, along with some other papers, have looked at whether or not there is this thing called the overscheduled hypothesis, this idea that kids are so overscheduled or have so, you know, spend so much time in extracurricular activities that they're experiencing, you know, detrimental effects such as decreases in academic achievement, more behavior problems, whether that be depression or anxiety or aggression or delinquency, or whether or not, you know, it's being influenced or influencing their social kind of functioning as well.
And what did you find?
And from most research, if you go across the gamut, either whether it be my dissertation or the numerous articles that I have on extracurricular activities or the rest of the activities field, there is limited support for this overscheduled hypothesis.
Limited support, meaning you're not buying it.
No, because a lot of the time, we've been looking at it for, you know, close to a decade now, and most of the time we are not showing that kids are, you know, occasionally there'll be studies that show that kids will have lower academic functioning, but in a study that I had published where I've tracked kids, or I used data that had tracked kids from kindergarten all the way through fifth grade and looked at their time in structured or extracurricular activities from kindergarten through fifth grade, I found five different groups of kids. And the kids that were consistently highest involvement in activities were actually doing pretty well compared to the other four trajectories.
That's Dr. Andrea Mata. She's a professor of psychology at University of Findlay in Ohio. We're talking about this idea that kids are overscheduled and whether that's bad for them or whether maybe the concern is overblown. I want to invite you to the conversation, our listeners. What impact has scheduling had on your kids' lives? Are your kids too busy? Does it affect your family? If you're a parent especially, we'd love to hear from you. If this all sounds familiar, do you find your kids are overscheduled? If not, how have you kept it under control? Call us at 816-235-2888. That's 235-2888. You can also email us at centralstandard@kcur.org. We're also taking your comments on KCUR's Facebook page today. We'd love to hear from you. 816-235-2888. So, Dr. Mata, what benefit do these extracurriculars or these activities bring to children, do you think? Why do they do better when they participate in them?
Research has consistently shown that as teenagers and children participate in extracurricular activities, it leads to better academic functioning, it reduces their likelihood of school dropout, it increases their networking opportunities, self-esteem. That's a big thing right now. Lots of parents are very concerned with their children's self-esteem, and extracurricular activities has been shown to increase self-esteem. In regards to relationships, it allows children to form relationships with their peers and then also adults. And then in another study, we looked at how extracurricular activity involvement during high school impacts your sense of school belonging, which then decreases your sense of or your suicidal threat and also your suicide attempts. So it decreases those two suicidal outcomes.
And in the research, is there a point at which there's a diminishing return? Is there a point where too much is too much?
For the most part, research really hasn't shown that there's a diminishing return. I mean, and there's some studies that have looked at kids that there's about anywhere from 3 to 6% of kids are participating in about 20-plus hours of extracurricular activities in addition to their family life, in addition to their school. And those kids are not showing any differences compared to kids that are not participating in any activities. So there, for the most part, there is no diminishing returns associated with higher levels of extracurricular activity.
And what do you make of the idea that this is taking away from family time? You're talking about how well they excel in academic measures and how well adjusted they are. What about time with family? Aren't those things important? What about free play time, these things that are being apparently missed out with all the overscheduling?
I mean, as a developmentalist, I completely agree that, you know, there has to be a balance. There has to be a balance between extracurricular activity involvement. There has to be, you know, there are, you know, significant benefits of family time. There's a consistent finding in the research that shows that the more dinners that the families have together, the better off, the better adjusted their children are. So you can get a lot of the same outcomes that are associated with extracurricular activities from family time and along with play time. So I'm in a complete agreement with Nicole where, like, the 3-4-year-olds, do they need to be in organized activities? Even though we know that they're good, however, there's been limited research on middle childhood extracurricular activities. So predominantly the research has focused on teenagers. So I'm in complete agreement with Nicole that maybe 3 to 4 is a little bit too young to get them in organized soccer.
Yeah, and let me come back to you, Nicole. You're hearing the critique of the book. Your book came out some time ago. What do you think about this idea that research shows actually kids benefit a lot from this heavy involvement in activities?
Oh, I think that I don't take it as a critique. Actually, I take what Andrea is saying as being supporting our message with the book. The title is The Overscheduled Child, but the original title when the book came out in hardcover was Hyperparenting, How to Avoid Hurting Your Child by Trying Too Hard, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a bit of a marketing decision there because I think people were worried about overscheduling. What we are talking about and what Andrea is talking about is really the same thing, is, you know, emphasizing the right things, making sure that your kids are feeling successful and happy, and that it is about that it is child-centered. I mean, I've seen research. I'm familiar with the family dinner research. There's a ton of it. There's also new stuff that came out in the last couple months about the child-centered family and that parents can actually derive a great deal of joy from, you know, arranging their lives around the family need. So I don't disagree at all. I think it's really, really important. But there is the performance anxiety. The childhood is a performance thing is what we're really talking about. The tiger mom, all that kind of pressure.
And take some calls.
It's a conversation that's kind of evolving over time.
Sorry to interrupt there, Nicole. That's Nicole Wise, a journalist and co-author of the book, which we now understand for marketing reasons was called The Overscheduled Child, Avoiding the Hyperparenting Trap. Also talking with Andrea Mata from the University of Findlay in Ohio. Before we take a call, let me ask one more question that I know is on a lot of listeners' minds, and that's about college. Some of the way parents plan their children's lives and schedule their children has to do with expectations they believe are out there for getting their kid into a good school. And there's a perception, especially among sort of high-performing kids, the ones who might go to a top-tier school, that they have to have this long, very full resume of clubs and sports and achievements. Is that true, and is that part of what's driving the situation?
If I can jump in,
please,
here,
please.
Sure which one of us you wanted to answer that.
Go ahead, Andrea.
I think that we've become Nicole. A brand-name society. Brand name culture. And there's this sense that, you know, the rankings of the top schools and so on and so forth is, you know, what everybody should drive to. And I think that for certain types of kids that can be who are aiming for certain types of careers or, you know, really know what they want, it can be very, very helpful to go to one of those schools because, yes, the networking opportunities, et cetera, and it is tough and competitive to get into those schools. But what those schools really want to see is a person who shows that they are, they know who they are, they have drive, they have the ability to you know, achieve a goal that they set for themselves. And so that's, you know, that's a certain type of person. It's not every kid. And a kid who goes to local state U or, you know, even community colleges, which are really rising in, are getting so much better and better. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, there are a lot of ways of being successful. There's not only one way to live, and there's not only one type of good college.
Thanks, Nicole. Andrea, would you add anything to that?
I mean, I completely agree with Nicole. I think college, I think that's one of the reasons why we've seen such a strong increase in extracurricular activity involvement. It's the whole idea that colleges' admissions committees are looking for those kind of extracurricular activities. And so students have been, like, told this, and they're like, okay, well, I need to get this on my resume, and I need to get this on my application, and this, and that, and this. And I think, so that has strongly increased our involvement in extracurricular activities, and I think that's starting to carry over in college students today. I mean, I had the conversation with my abnormal psychology class, I believe, last week, and I think they are listening now, about how they are overscheduled and how they feel, you know, that they're participating in like 7 extracurricular activities in addition to, you know, going to work and working 20 to 30, maybe sometimes 40 hours a week, in addition to taking, you know, 18 credit hours.
Right.
So I think we're starting to see how for the last, you know, 20 years, we've increased extracurricular activities, and now it's kind of following them into the college years as well.
Appreciate your extending our listenership by requiring your class to listen to the program.
Oh,
thank
no
you.
Problem.
816-235-2888 is the number to call. Let's talk to Andrea in Lawrence. Andrea, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much.
Tell us your story of parenting, and are you a hyper parent?
I would like to say that I'm probably what you would call a reformed tiger mom.
Okay.
I definitely have my children doing quite a few things. I have a freshman in high school and a fifth grader, and my philosophy on parenting, I'm a single mom with a lot of great involvement from their father. My philosophy is I just basically want my kids to be able to perform at the absolute ceiling of their abilities, and I want them to have the opportunity to try as many different things as they can to find what their affinity happens to be for. I had my son playing a lot of sports until we narrowed it down to basketball being the one that he loves and really enjoys, and you know, he feels really secure. And so, you know, this past weekend, he ended up being in a tournament away from home that we drove to where he had 3 games both days, Saturday and Sunday. And that sounds excessive maybe for a 10-year-old, but the excitement that he had, and even though they didn't win the whole tournament, I think he felt a great sense of accomplishment. Hey, my entire family got together and traveled to watch me play. Even my sister, who was here with her Kindle, you know, reading her school books that she needed, and it can be a family time that way.
Okay, well, let me ask our guest to respond to that, Andrea. Is her experience typical? Is it good for her son to have 3 basketball games in one day? What do you think, Nicole?
I think it's great if that's something that's fun for him and he's looking forward to it. But if every single weekend were like that, that's a problem. I also, having had 4 kids, and I had they were boy, girl. First 2 were a year apart. They both played travel soccer. So our family situation was that we had 2 kids doing that type of thing many weekends. Mm-hmm. That got really intense.
Yep.
Tough for my younger kids.
Intense.
Sound familiar, Andrea?
Yes, it is. And I think you also have to be extremely careful in scheduling downtime. And also, I'm really big on reading and making sure that academics come first before anything else. And if the academics aren't where they need to be, then, you know, we have to make adjustments. Earlier on this year, my daughter was taking piano and viola lessons. And, you know, she was just hitting a real wall with the viola and really did not want to do it. And my first inclination, like I said, as a quote-unquote reformed tiger mom, was just to say, nope, you have to keep doing it. We're not quitting. And then I said to myself, what is this for? Is this for me or is this for her? I wanted her to continue, and she didn't. So I had to step back, and it was hard.
Andrea, I appreciate you calling. I'm sorry we got a bunch of calls here to get to today, but thanks for sharing your story.
Yeah, thank you. Bye-bye.
Let's talk to John in Blue Springs, Missouri. Good morning, John.
Yeah, good morning, sir. I thank you for taking my call, and great conversation. I appreciate it.
Thanks.
My son is in middle school. I'm a single dad. And I understand and I appreciate the fact that extracurricular activities are probably the best way for a child to develop their creativity and their ability to get along with people with like interests, and also to get a sense of who they are. The school district where we are is outstanding, so the academic section is taken care of quite well by the school itself. But what I'm surprised at is I'm personally from Europe, and there are only two parents. There is a gentleman from Asia and myself from Europe who regularly every day come to pick up our son and drop them off to school personally to the door. And that's always struck me as a bit strange when I came to the States, that people don't seem to be doing that. And I'm wondering if there is a bit of a greater focus on extracurricular activities and letting other entities take care of our children's education here in the U.S. and undervaluing possibly family time.
Appreciate that. Great question, John. Let me ask Dr. Andrea Mata, is there a shift in responsibility for the growth of your child from parents to these other entities, coaches, teachers, club leaders? Is that part of what's happening with all these extracurricular activities?
I don't think so. I mean, I think that in our society, we've seen the value in extracurricular activities, but I don't think parents are like, let's say, okay, let me just let the teachers worry about their education and let the coach worry about their sports kind of thing. I think parents are understanding that maybe the teachers are probably the best kind of person to kind of formulate, kind of guide their children in school, and maybe the coaches are best in the sporting activities, but parents are still the parents. And we know from developmental research that parents still strongly influence their children, especially in middle childhood. It's usually the teenage years that the peers start to, have a greater influence. But I think what John is maybe mentioning is him and this other gentleman, I can't remember if it was a gentleman, I'm sorry, are the only two, parents that drop their kids off at school. I think maybe what's happening is that parents have learned through developmental research that autonomy and making sure that your kids are autonomous is a really big thing, especially for middle childhood. And so maybe having, parents allowing not dropping their kids off at school and letting their children, walk up to the door is maybe the parents' way of trying to encourage more autonomy out of their children.
John, thank you so much for the call.
Certainly. Thank you.
816-235-2888 is the number to call with your questions or comments about parenting and the scheduling of children in today's world. Catherine is calling us from Lee's Summit. Good morning, Catherine.
Good morning.
Tell me about the scheduling of your kids. What are your concerns about it?
Well, I don't really have so many concerns. I think my bigger concern is that I think people are not learning what work-life balance needs to look like. I think when kids are overscheduled and they're just doing too much, that there becomes a point that they're not able to determine what's important. There has to be some time for downtime. There has to be some time for family time. And I think when people are overstimulated, they need to be stimulated constantly. And there's a point of concern for me where they can't even sit still and learn to just think and listen. And I have three children, and I was a single parent, and I have run around to different activities and made it appear that I'm two places at once when I really wasn't. But I just think that work-life balance is not being taught when kids are overstimulated, and I'll take my comment out there.
Catherine, thank you so much for the call. She's raising a point that I think each of you has made it in different ways, Nicole and Dr. Andrea Mata, that balance is the key. How do you find that balance, though? How do you know what is the right number of hours or the right number of activities for your child? Nicole?
I think that's highly individual. Depends on who the child is, and it's one of the things that we talk about in terms of that sort of having downtime and learning to really read and interact with your child and responding to how he or she feels starting in infancy. So my four kids, a couple of them really like to do a lot of things, and a couple of them really need more downtime. I have one really fast-moving, highly competitive kid. She's now in finance and, you know, has a big career, and she needs the more the better. She didn't like to sit around. In fact, she would end up making mischief, but her brother really needed to be able to say, I can't do baseball and soccer. I just can't do it. It's too much pressure. So it's individual.
Yeah.
It's your temperament, your nature.
And I guess I wonder if that's a helpful word to parents. No offense, but that doesn't help them, right? I mean, Dr. Andrea Amata, do you have any guidance for parents on how you know how much is too much?
I think it's a matter of, and Nicole mentioned it earlier, she just mentioned it now, I think it's very much on an individual basis. And I think it's whenever you hear your children saying, like, I'm bored, maybe they need more things to do, whereas other kids are like, oh, my God, I feel not like another activity. I don't want to do another thing. I just kind of want to stay home. I think those are kind of indicators that maybe there's, you know, I usually call it a life-work balance instead of work-life balance. I think there might be a life-work balance out of, you know, whack, and that issue might need to be addressed. And then in addition to, like, the kids expressing, you know, maybe that they feel overwhelmed or they feel overscheduled, I think the parents also have to be in tune to their own, you know, stress levels and their own levels of feeling overwhelmed. Because a lot of the time it's like, if a parent, so say there's, you know, we have a lot of single parents calling in. So there's a single parent and they may have, you know, anywhere from 2 to 3 children. And it's up to that parent to get the children where they need to be. So that child might not be expressing that they're overwhelmed. But that parent, because they're, you know, they're the main person that's responsible for getting, you know, child A to soccer and child B to, you know, violin and child C to another activity, that parent might become stressed, and then it might be in the best interest of the family system to decrease the number of activities that the children are participating in, because of the extensive research that we know that parents who are stressed, they tend to lower their parental warmth, and parental warmth is so important with attachment kind of stuff with their kids.
Let's talk to
me. Totally.
Oh, go ahead, Nicole. Sorry,
if I could just jump in, because
sure.
There's something that was screaming at me that I wanted to say.
Please.
I totally agree with Andrea. That's critical. But the other thing about boredom is that we shouldn't be afraid of boredom necessarily, because that's where creativity and discovery can happen. One of the things that I used to do as, you know, a mom with a house of kids was leave things lying around, like Newsweek magazine, if it was something, you know, if I would say to my son, you know, I'd really like you to read this, I think, you know, that would be, you know, sometimes they'd pay attention and sometimes they wouldn't. But if they're kind of wandering around, and there are craft things that they can do with little kids, you can kind of direct that. Or there's interesting stuff that they'll pick up on their own. I think it gives kids a real opportunity to
sure.
discover things on their own, and that's so important.
Let's take one more question from Megan in Kansas City, Missouri. Megan, good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome to the program. What's your question?
Thank you. I was going to say that I think a lot of the overscheduling problem is a socioeconomic problem. My son used to go to Montessori school, and all of the kids were overscheduled, you know, the Chinese language lessons, everything. And we made the switch to public school, and all the events that public school puts on for the parents, there's such a small turnout that I think it makes a really big difference of where the parents are coming from and what their understanding of everything is for their kids. And
yeah.
I wanted to see, I guess, how we could broaden the playing field for everybody.
Good question, Megan. And along with that, Dr. Andrea Amata, this is a very upper middle class problem we're talking about, isn't it? Not everyone has access to the same number of activities.
Correct. In one of my recent publications where I looked at the different, you know, pathways of kids from kindergarten through fifth grade, we did realize that the 4.2% of kids that we classified as highly involved, they were coming from higher income families compared to the other four trajectories. The 50% of kids that have very low levels of extracurricular activities, they tend to come from lower income families. So it does tend to be more of a problem with middle class, affluent families compared to the lower class.
And Nicole Wise, last word about that?
Oh, I totally agree with what Andrea just said. It's a very much a socioeconomic issue, and also our economic environment has changed since we wrote that book. These last 5 years have been pretty difficult too, in other ways. So stress is an important thing to monitor in family life.
Well, that's where we'll have to leave it. I want to thank our guest. That's Nicole Wise. She's a journalist, co-author of The Overscheduled Child, Avoiding the Hyperparenting Trap, and Andrea Mata, professor of psychology at the University of Findlay in Ohio. Thanks to both of you for being with us.
Thank you for having
you.
When we come back, we're going to talk about being an ambassador. Dr. Alan Katz, former ambassador of the Republic of Portugal, now a professor at UMKC. He'll talk with us about the experience and how you could be an ambassador yourself, or maybe not. You're listening to Central Standard on KCUR. Stay with us.